I only have one more introductory comment, and that is I just thought that all the talks were perfect in terms of like Jim's scalpel-like precision addressing whatever topic he's going after, and Jonathan loves the history and bringing that along, and Dave's stories and just not afraid to say whatever comes into his mind, really. I did have written down to say Unfreedom of the Press, the name of the book that he kept lifting up with his hand over top of so he couldn't actually see what book it was, but then somebody else asked at the end, so that was great. And then me, I just say theological things, but I tried to say them more less excitedly, just, you know, matter of fact. So I worked on that.
Also, not like, I couldn't make this up. I just got a text message, and I thought it was probably one of these people either with a question or telling me my fly was down or something, so I thought I should take it. And it's a good thing I did, because this is while you were talking. Hi, I'm Karen from Mike Bloomberg's campaign. With so much at stake, Americans deserve a Democratic candidate who can beat Donald Trump. Will you support Mike?
Terry got the same text. Anybody else get that text?
You got it too?
Okay, so awesome. First question, are you going to vote for Donald Trump in the 2020 presidential election? We actually had a whole night in the summer of 2016 where we met at our house, and we actually had to answer that same question. At that point, I'm not even sure that Trump had the nomination. Yeah, so we also don't really care about our tax-exempt status necessarily, but so we're talking as what we will vote as individually, not coercing you to vote for in your responsibility. So, yeah. So, Dad, do you need to actually, you might as well get it on record.
Is this a question to me?
Everybody? Yeah. Okay, I can lead off. Yeah, when he ran last time, I said there was not even a choice that he was it. And I only voted for him thinking I would get maybe a somewhat conservative Supreme Court justice. That was it. I was ready to go with that alone. And it's ended up, there are over 180, I think it's 189 now or 185 in the federal system that he's appointed that are conservative, coming out of conservative think tanks. And that means one in 14 federal judges have now been appointed with that bent in the system, which is just unbelievable that that could happen in 3 years. If you want to look at it, you get on the website, there's 389 things that he's already done as president. He's the most active president I have ever seen in my lifetime, bar none, doing things in a good general direction. And it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just crazy. So that's my opinion.
I would say if nothing changes between now and November, yes, I will vote for Donald Trump. I did not vote for him in 2016. I did not believe him because I've had the unfortunate, I guess, duty to listen to politicians most of my life. Rarely do they make good on campaign promises. So I thought somebody with a checkered or at least consistently amoral history could not be relied upon to or trusted to do what he said he was going to do. I actually thought about him as I have most politicians, and I have been, I think shocked is not too strong of a word, just to see exactly what percentage of the things he said he would do that he has done, but also other things that I didn't anticipate. And then there is way too much that has actually gone well on his watch to simply be attributed to coincidence. So it does not mean that God has blessed because if he's a man of high moral fiber, but there's no question that God has used him to do some real good for our country. And plus, it's rollicking good fun to watch the other side completely go up in flames anytime he says something, anything. It doesn't matter. And, I mean, I would do it again just to watch the Not My President fiasco at UCLA.
I, too, did not vote for Donald last time. At the time, I was concerned that he and the party were moving in what felt like a pro-homosexual rights direction that appears to not have materialized. So at the moment, if things don't change, I will probably cast my vote for him this time.
Yeah, I think at the 2016 meeting, I definitely represented the hell no, I won't vote for that person.
Never Trump was.
Yeah, that was the popular hashtag. And I mean, for a while, that was as close to me as the hashtag blessed. So those are like my two favorite that summer. And I would say that one of the things that surprises you about liars sometimes is that they lie in ways that you like. So I like some of the ways that he is lying more now than what I wasn't sure he was lying about then. I think that he is making a mockery of Christians in a number of ways, even by the Christians that want to be so obviously associated with him that are getting publicity from it. And I think that that is actually going to have its own consequence. So I forget what the gentleman's name was that you read his commentary. It's fine to say that Trump did not cause the divide, but he is making it bigger by his own way of handling it. So I am very thankful that he's the first president who ever went to the National March for Life and disgusted that he had to be the first one to do it. And I, like Jonathan, and I'm sure we would all say, but like, it is fun watching the people that he is making upset. I do enjoy that in terms of, as much as you can enjoy train wrecks, the kind of people who are sticking their heads out the windows and yelling and screaming are the kind of people that are, I would prefer to see sticking their heads out the window and yelling and screaming. So that's totally fun. So if I vote for him in 2020, it will largely be a decision based off of wanting more fun rather than wanting, like, believing what he's doing. So there's not anybody else that I'm excited about either. So, none of the, as the more that the Democrats talk, whichever one is going to be put up against him is going to love abortion. You can't be, they're trying to define themselves as you can't be in our party unless you are for abortion. So that would not be an option. So my only other option would be a conscience, write in vote. But because Trump has lied in a more conservative direction, can you lie in a conservative direction? I guess. So because of that, and I agree that he's gotten a bunch of things done, and and that's the kind of person that usually then brings somebody out from the other side who is ready to fight fire with the same kind of fire that he's bringing. So Our president is not helping civil discourse. Our president is not helping people understand why they should do something different. He is, the only thing that I can see that he's really helping people understand that they should do something different is why they should not be a Democrat. But I don't see him persuasively helping people understand why they should be pro-life. He's just putting himself with that group. He's not persuading people why conservative justices should be placed, though he is doing it. So I'm very thankful for the surprises, and am not never Trumper like I was. So I will at least drop the hashtag for this go around, but it's just, they don't offer you lines to write all of your qualifications before you get to check the box. So I'd probably be more excited about it if it was an essay question, not a checkbox question. Okay, sweet. Other questions?
He asked me where I get most of my stuff. I keep the TV on all the time on MSNBC, CNN, and then Fox. And who? Yeah. Most of it I listen to the enemy. And I listen to Levin, and Rush is still the king of the sarcasm and able to blast stuff. And I read different blogs. I get tired of cross-politic and that kind of stuff. I definitely got mad at Mueller quite a while ago. I'm looking to blow the thing up, and the guy is that's what he's doing, and I love it. And yeah. And but that's where I get most of my information. This book by Levin is really good. I wanted to buy a couple other books, but I also want, I'm doing a whole nother thing and I don't have that much time. But the other book that I think would really be good is, and it's not available right now, but it's 100 Supreme Court cases. He was interviewed by Levin 2 weeks ago. He's a constitutional scholar. He wrote a book on the 100 most important Supreme Court cases. And then there's 16 hours of video that you get with the book that you can watch professors talk about it. And he said that if you listen to that book, you'll know more than the constitutional lawyers that are graduating from Harvard know now. And it is really incredible to me to watch people like Dershowitz and stuff who, if you would ask me 10 years ago, the guy was totally lost and would never come back from how far left he'd gone. And when you see that he now has moved over to the conservative side with the Supreme Court because all the libertarian people have just gone away, the free speech advocates, all that stuff, all those old-time liberals are gone. They're really not liberals. And an old-time liberal can be a very conservative person personally. And it's like I often use Nat Hentoff, who was a Village Voice, which is a commie rag, used to be, it's no longer published, in the Greenwich Village in New York. Nat Hentoff was their editor. When he realized that abortion killed a baby, this is in 1963-62, he said, I'm against abortion. You can't, that voice is not being heard. I am for life. I'm for that. And they hated him till he died, but he stayed true to that kind of thing. So there are people out there that will listen to you. I have a friend that I play pool with that's an atheist. He and I argue all the time, but the points that Sean was showing, there is a God, and he now has finally admitted to me, well, yeah, my God is, there is no God. He said, I'll give you that point, which, you know, it's kind of interesting. So
So the answer specifically is some of the standard cable news shows you watch and yeah. Mark Levin's book you really like. And you had mentioned in your talk also some Hillsdale classes.
Oh, yeah, the Hillsdale courses are excellent. There's a guy, Victor David Hansen, who has a whole series on World War II that is really good. And he is an expert in the Peloponnesian Wars, and he's a Stanford scholar. He's also a farmer in Central California. He's an interesting guy. But the Hillsdale thing, and then you get on those and then use the links that they give you to listen to other people and stuff. A lot of YouTube stuff by these guys. Like, you can see all of Levin's TV shows on YouTube if you wanted. So there are ways to see these people, and they're out there.
Does anybody have, like, a really good podcast that you listen to that's, related to this discussion? You know, if Jubal's driving in the car, something to listen to, as opposed to sitting down at a desk, you know, and watching extra stuff, that's harder to do. Anybody have a political? Ben Shapiro. Yeah. What's the name of his? The Daily Wire. Okay. In terms of audiobook, Ben Shapiro's book, The Right Side of History, is a Jew arguing that there has to be a God of the system. So I know Jim read it, and I read it. Did you read that, Jonathan?
Yeah.
So that was a, there's got to be a God recognized somehow, some way, from a non-Christian. That was very interesting. So
yeah, Mark Levin is a Jew also, and but has Christian guests all the time.
And I would say it's in the book list in the back of your booklet. But any almost anything by Thomas Sowell, and you can get those audiobooks also. He's a phenomenal thinker as well. So,
all right, good. Another question. So in light of the increasing political divide and worldviews that are present in our nation, what are ways that Christians can speak to people on the opposing side? What are ways that they can approach that to try to still not compromise, but be effective in at least having the conversation, if not maybe planting seeds or persuading people? Is that a fair re-summary? Okay.
Yeah, I think that the divide should be sharper. What's happened is finally these people have had to take their clothes off and show you who they are. I voted for Mitt Romney when he ran for president. Disgusting. Okay, I held my nose and voted for him then because I knew that he had created the model for Obamacare in Massachusetts when he was the governor of Massachusetts. He's a perfect example of the political situation that I talked about, how crooked it is. He lives in La Jolla, California. He's now the senator from Utah and spent his, you know, other political life being the governor of Massachusetts and stuff. I mean, these people just move around and get voted, and they have no allegiance to that place they are. They're just looking for a place to plug in and be powerful. Just today yesterday on MSNBC, Bloomberg was asked, well, both, if Hillary becomes your running mate, both people will be from New York. He said, no problem. I got a home in Colorado. I'll just go there, you know. So they totally see everything as one world. Everything they got is theirs. They have no real allegiance anywhere. And I think that needs to be more exposed, not less exposed. So, and once that all comes out, people go, it's like, I believe that the black vote could be as high as 30% for Trump this time, because they're realizing if you're black and in Baltimore or, you know, South Chicago, enough is enough. 50 years of Democratic rule has gotten you absolutely nowhere. So give it a whirl. Try some. And these people are coming out of the woodwork now, talking on all these places, and it's interesting. You know?
In trying to approach people on the other side of the divide, step one, go back to Mark Twain's quote, you know, ascertain if they're stupid, and then just walk away. But and yeah, I say a tongue in cheek. But assuming there are other people that disagree with me who are can still be reasonable and civil, then just start looking for the common ground. If they're coming to me, how can you? You're a Christian. How can you possibly vote for Trump? And I'm saying, I agree with you. I have no reason to believe the man's a Christian. But I cannot vote for people who also encourage murder. So I'm in a bind. Who should I pick? But take the Constitution. The other side will, they're cheering these decisions. Gay marriage and abortion. They're cheering that. Yay, courts. My point I make back to them is I say, whether you like the decision they made or not, you should be very upset about how they reached the decision because they totally violated what their job is. And I said, and frankly, if someday it comes when we get a lot of conservative judges again and they start making rulings you don't like, you're going to have to keep your mouth shut because you were cheering when they broke the rules in the way you like. You can't start screaming because they're breaking the rules in a way you don't like. And so those kinds of conversations can at least make people start thinking that there's something fundamentally broke today, whether you like the decisions that are coming out or not. And, I'm not going to convince them to, if I start with my position that, well, God says, I'm probably not going to get anywhere with them. Now, I can still declare that, but politically, I'm not going to get anywhere with that conversation. But show them that what they think is a good exercise of our government. You say, no, in fact, that was a horrible exercise of our government, not because of the outcome, but because of the process. And that begins to give you a platform from which to discuss and say, okay, let's get that fixed. And then, you know what, if you really believe something should be the way of the law of the land, go through the amendment process. Do it the right way. There's a reason why they don't do it through the amendment process, because they know there's no way it would ever pass. And so,
yeah, I would echo that. I'm a card carrying Calvinist, and I don't. I think I'm out of the cage stage of Calvinism, as it's been dubbed. So I don't go around looking for anything with two legs that calls itself an Arminian and want to debate it. The older I get and the more I know of the Bible and the more I grow theologically, the more settled I am in my conviction that God is sovereign over all. That necessarily includes soteriology, because that's part of the all, and it includes everything else too. So I am happy to engage anybody in a conversation about that, but I feel less and less threatened that my perspective is going to be refuted. And the more I study of history and the more I study of politics, the more settled I am on the conservative side of the aisle. And so when I am engaging somebody who is a flaming liberal, I'm not super panicked that he's going to sway me, or I'm not also freaking out that it's on me to try to convert him to my way of thinking. Because history and the facts speak pretty plainly for themselves. What the left is trying to do right now is upset the order of things under which our country has flourished. And we can actually go on for a very long time talking about this, but a very cold, calculated, measured explanation as to historically what has happened to enable our country to flourish is all of the persuasion that ought to be necessary, or at least is all of the material that ought to be necessary to persuade. And from my brief experience, usually when somebody is super defensive and shrill, it's because he's trying to convince himself first. Kind of like the angry atheist. He's angry because he knows in his heart that God exists, but he's railing against that and is trying to persuade others to justify also his own professed unbelief. So likewise, I'm actually, and I hope this isn't condescending, but I'm more inclined to pity because they're actually in large measure ignorant. Like, man, you actually don't know how awesome it could be. So hopefully that then open some channels for communication if they know that I actually respect them as a human, because the value that we share is given by God as we are commonly made in his image and likeness. So I have not just a obligation, but a happy ability to affirm that person's value, even if I totally disagree with them politically. And even that right there is something that many on the other side of the conversation don't have. So I think there's a hundred different ways, but one is to go ahead and be informed and to understand how we got to where we are. That's part of what I was trying to scratch at in my talk, is a lot of chronological snobs assume that newer is better and old is antiquated, and those dumb people back then believed this, but look at us modern sophisticates. So that's not the case at all. So learn and then engage.
Okay, Karen from President Trump's reelection campaign just texted me and said we have time for just one more question or two. What are our thoughts on the idea of incrementalism and being able to make small gains in particular areas rather than all or nothing kind of things? We either get all of what we want or we're not going to be satisfied or happy with that particular movement. Is that a good summary? Okay. I am happy with contented discontentment, or discontented contentment, or finding lots of things to be thankful for while not being finished. So usually you don't go from 1 to 9 immediately. You go from 1 to 2 and 3 to 4. And, you know, while being able to have 9 as the end goal, not giving up, you know, once not declaring victory in our aviator sunglasses when we got from 1 to 1 3/4, we win. And certainly not with the abortion as an example. You know, there's I would say there, you know, no abortions of any kind is what we're going for. But whatever kind of laws, I'm happy to recognize those as any kind of recovery, and in other ways, you know, is fine. I would say to make compromises when we can with our neighbors, and certainly if we can move in a good direction, I'm fine with trajectory.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm provided in the political discourse that the agreement isn't, okay, I'll give you 2 inches, just don't come back and ask for 3. No, I'm, especially in the case of something like abortion, you know, the end game is no abortions. But it doesn't make sense to me, those that have passed up on a chance for some compromise legislation, you know, because it's an all or nothing game to them. Well, that's a whole lot of babies dying in the meantime. Take what we can get and then keep fighting for the rest. So politically, I think incrementalism is the only reasonable path forward, provided, again, that doesn't mean that you're settling for, you know, half of what the goal is, as long as you can come back and continue the conversation the next day.
The way the government's set up, it's a checks and balance, so you always have to make a deal. I think that's one of the main reasons why Trump's been successful. He wants to make a deal somehow, so you find a way to get a little bit of what you want or get a lot to trade for something else, and it's always been that way. I'll vote for your thing if you'll vote for mine. That kind of stuff happens, so one step at a time.
We had a big discussion about whether to include Art of the Deal in the book list in the back. It's going to be $500 million. And then they're like, well, we can't pay that. It's actually only $100 million. Oh, good. Yeah. So trying to get into the politics game without actually soiling your pants in the game and compromising your soul, but still then getting involved, what would be the process for making those steps?
I don't know what the next steps would be to get involved in politics, but I think I understand what you're getting at. I'm also excited to say that your question is kind of moot, because there actually are politicians who haven't sold their soul, and there are politicians who are faithful to their constituents and to the Lord at the same time, where God has called them. The sad thing is that there are very, very, very few. I do think, to my knowledge, Ben Sasse is not a sellout. He's in Nebraska and is a senator and sort of backed into politics because he was a faithful Christian who was capable and a leader in a variety of contexts. And then it was the old, if you see it, you're called to it kind of thing, and has, by his faithfulness, sort of elevated in influence, and his reputation has grown too. But because he kind of backed into it, he has also sort of been completely fine with being out of it too. So I would say that being the right kind of person and being open-handed is necessary. There's a real sense in which, and I don't mean this glibly, if you are called to it, just be faithful and just watch what happens.
I don't think that there's a lot of literature on it, because I think most Christians don't care. So Ben Sasse is a precious, rare example of, so reading his books would be interesting for somebody who wanted to see somebody trying to do something and be a clear Christian about it. But I sadly think we, even as a church, we're largely at the stage of trying to get people to realize it is even okay. It doesn't have to be a guilty pleasure where you're watching CNN under the table. but to learn how to process that and think about it, and that Jesus is not upset that you don't have your politics study Bible to write in the margin which senator goes with what verse, or however that would look. But we're at a stage where we don't have lots of Christian policies, because we don't even have anybody who wants to be a Christian politician overall. So there's a lot of work to get back there. And finding people, examples of people who are doing that. And yeah, I'd say finding even local examples, you know, and asking them how they got into it and what they would recommend.
Yeah, and you know, what we really do need today is statesmen, not politicians. You know, I think there's a difference between the two. You read a biography like on the life of Wilberforce, for example. That was an honorable man who was standing alone for years and years and years fighting slavery, and yet through his statesmanship and his logic and his compelling arguments, he slowly but surely, you know, won hearts and minds over. Ultimately, it's going to be a function of God. Today, sadly, Dave's old enough to probably concur with this. There was a time when the major political parties had similar outcomes in mind. Or at least, you know, they're trying to do the, they had similar shared values. They were just arguing about the best way to accomplish those things. Sadly, today, we don't typically have a lot of shared values. And so then you got the double problem of, I've not only got to get the guy to change his values, and then let's agree on how to go solve the value problem. So that's a real tough nut to crack today. But I would still say, you know, anybody that feels so inclined should dive in. Just know that it's going to be a tough slog. If you're a solid believer, a person of integrity, you know, I think you can keep from letting this, you know, the system chew you up. But there's nothing saying that that has to happen. I think go into the process with just as much willingness to go in, with the same willingness to get out. You know, at the point you realize I've gone in, I've done what I can do, get out. It's when those politicians get in there and they say, this is my livelihood, this is what I do. You know, then it's all about canvassing, getting votes, raising money, you know, making deals just so that you can check a box and say, I made a law. You know, I mean, it just takes a person of integrity that gets in there and says, I'm very focused on what needs to be done, and I'll take the heat. And at some point, you know, if it's clear, nothing's going to budge, then say, okay, this is not my life. I can get out and go do something else.
Are we still attending the city council meetings, and are we having any impact? We have not been officially attending city council meetings like we were for that year where we were sending a rotation of guys. Jonathan regularly goes to things that the mayor is at, and so Jonathan is godly hobnobbing. I think that's a fruit of the spirit. And the mayor recognizes him. So, I mean, how can that not be good later when we have a pothole that we need to have our church services in? They can fix it. But, yeah, we have, in terms of effectiveness, I think we'll find that out when we have our first wetlands issue and we need to get it rezoned, and we'll find out how effective our faces have been.
Father, we are grateful that you have not left us in the dark or to our own devices to figure all of this out. And we do pity those who cast off your word and try to muddle through life without it. We don't want to take for granted what you have said. And we also don't want to take for granted that many of our ancestors have taken for granted the truths of your word. And really, in a good way, they operated with that as their starting point. So help us to love it more. Help us to love our neighbors more actively, and because they bear your image and likeness. And may our faithfulness be good for our community, both locally as well as nationally. And we know that you'll be honored in this, and we make these requests in Christ's name. Amen.